those of Bagshot Row, did very well. Old Gaffer Gamgee got 2 sacks of potatoes, a new spade, a woolen waistcoat, and a bottle of ointment for creaking joints. Old Rory Brandybuck, in return for much hospitality, got 12 bottles of old Wynyards, a strong red wine from the South Farthing, and now quite mature, as it had been laid down by Bilbo's father. Rory quite forgave Bilbo, and voted him a capital fellow after the first bottle. There was plenty of everything left for Frodo, and, of course, all the chief treasures, as well as the books, pictures, and more than enough furniture, were left in his possession. There was, however, no sign nor mention of money or jewellery. Not a penny piece or a glass bead was given away. Frodo had a very trying time that afternoon. A false rumour that the whole household was being distributed free spread like wildfire, and before long the place was packed with people who had no business there, but couldn't be kept out. Labels got torn off and mixed, and quarrels broke out. Some people tried to do swaps and deals in the hall, and others tried to make off with minor items not addressed to them, or with anything that seemed unwanted or unwatched. The road to the gate was blocked with barrows and handcarts. In the middle of the commotion, the Sackville Bagginses arrived. Frodo had retired for a while and left his friend Merry Brandybuck to keep an eye on things. When Otho loudly demanded to see Frodo, Merry bowed politely. "He is indisposed," he said. "He is resting."
"Hiding, you mean," said Lobelia. "Anyway, we want to see him, and we mean to see him. Just go and tell him so."
Merry left them a long while in the hall, and they had time to discover their parting gift of spoons. It did not improve their tempers. Eventually they were shown into the study. Frodo was sitting at a table with a lot of papers in front of him. He looked indisposed, to see the Sackville Bagginses at any rate, and he stood up, fidgeting with something in his pocket. But he spoke quite politely. The Sackville Bagginses were rather offensive. They began by offering him bad bargain prices, as between friends, for various valuable and unlabeled things. When Frodo replied that only the things specially directed by Bilbo were being given away, they said the whole affair was very fishy.
"Only one thing is clear to me," said Otho, "and that is that you are doing exceedingly well out of it. I insist on seeing the will."
Otho would have been Bilbo's heir, but for the adoption of Frodo. He read the will carefully and snorted. It was, unfortunately, very clear and correct, according to the legal customs of hobbits, which demand, among other things, 7 signatures of witnesses in red ink.
"Foiled again," he said to his wife. "And after waiting 60 years, spoons, fiddlesticks!"
He snapped his fingers under Frodo's nose and stumped off. But Lobelia was not so easily got rid of. A little later, Frodo came out of the study to see how things were going on, and found her still about the place, investigating nooks and corners and tapping the floors. He escorted her firmly off the premises, after he had relieved her of several small but rather valuable articles that had somehow fallen inside her umbrella. Her face looked as if she was in the throes of thinking out a really crushing parting remark. But all she found to say, turning round on the step, was,
"You live to regret it, young fellow. Why didn't you go too? You don't belong here. You know Baggins. You're a Brandybuck."
"Did you hear that, Merry? That was an insult, if you like," said Frodo as he shut the door on her.
"It was a compliment," said Merry Brandybuck. "And so, of course, not true."
Then they went round the hole and evicted 3 young hobbits, 2 boffins and a bolger, who were knocking holes in the walls of one of the cellars. Frodo also had a tussle with young Sancho Proudfoot, old Odo Proudfoot's grandson, who had begun an excavation in the larger pantry, where he thought there was an echo. The legend of Bilbo's gold excited both curiosity and hope, for legendary gold, mysteriously obtained, if not positively ill-gotten, is, as everyone knows, anyone's for the finding, unless the search is interrupted. When he had overcome Sancho and pushed him out, Frodo collapsed on a chair in the hall. "It's time to close the shop, Merry," he said. "Lock the door, and don't open it to anyone today, not even if they bring a battering ram." Then he went to revive himself with a belated cup of tea. He'd hardly sat down when there came a soft knock at the front door. "Lobelia again, most likely," he thought. "She must have thought of something really nasty and have come back again to say it. It can wait." He went on with his tea. The knock was repeated, much louder, but he took no notice. Suddenly the wizard's head appeared at the window.
"If you don't let me in, Frodo, I shall blow your door right down your hole and out through the hill," he said.
"My dear Gandalf, half a minute," cried Frodo, running out of the room to the door. "Come in, come in. I thought it was Lobelia."
"Then I forgive you. But I saw her some time ago, driving a pony trap toward Bywater with a face that would have curdled new milk."
"She'd already nearly curdled me, honestly. I nearly tried on Bilbo's ring. I longed to disappear."
"Don't do that," said Gandalf, sitting down. "Do be careful of that ring, Frodo. In fact, it's partly about that that I've come to say a last word."
"Well, what about it?"
"What do you know already?"
"Only what Bilbo told me. I've heard his story, how he found it, and how he used it. On his journey, I mean."
"Which story, I wonder?" said Gandalf.
"Oh, not what he told the dwarves and put in his book," said Frodo. "He told me the true story soon after I came to live here. He said you had pestered him till he told you, so I had better know too."
"No secrets between us, Frodo," he said. "But they are not to go any farther. It's mine anyway."
"That's interesting," said Gandalf. "Well, what did you think of it all?"
"If you mean inventing all that about a present, well, I thought the true story much more likely, but I couldn't see the point of altering it at all. It was very unlike Bilbo to do so anyway, and I thought it rather odd."
"So did I. But odd things may happen to people that have such treasures, if they use them. Let it be a warning to you to be very careful with it. It may have other powers than just making you vanish when you wish to."
"I don't understand," said Frodo.
"Neither do I," answered the wizard. "I've merely begun to wonder about the ring, especially since last night. No need to worry, but if you take my advice, you will use it very seldom or not at all. At least I beg you not to use it in any way that will cause talk or rouse suspicion. I say again, keep it safe and keep it secret."
"You are very mysterious. What are you afraid of?"
"I'm not certain, so I will say no more. I may be able to tell you something when I come back. I'm going off at once, so this is goodbye for the present."
He got up. "At once?" cried Frodo. "Why, I thought you were staying on for at least a week. I was looking forward to your help."
"I didn't mean to, but I've had to change my mind. I may be away for a good while, but I'll come and see you again as soon as I can. Expect me when you see me. I shall slip in quietly. I shan't often be visiting the Shire openly again. I find that I have become rather unpopular. They say I am a nuisance and a disturber of the peace. Some people are actually accusing me of spiriting Bilbo away, or worse. If you want to know, there is supposed to be a plot between you and me to get hold of his wealth."
"Some people!" exclaimed Frodo. "You mean Otho and Lobelia? How abominable! I would give them Bag End and everything else if I could get Bilbo back and go off tramping in the country with him. I love the Shire, but I begin to wish, somehow, that I'd gone too. I wonder if I shall ever see him again."
"So do I," said Gandalf. "And I wonder many other things. Goodbye now. Take care of yourself. Look out for me, especially at unlikely times. Goodbye."
Frodo saw him to the door. he gave a final wave of his hand and walked off at a surprising pace. But Frodo thought the old wizard looked unusually bent, almost as if he was carrying a great weight. The evening was closing in, and his cloaked figure quickly vanished into the twilight. Frodo did not see him again for a long time. Chapter 2. The Shadow of the Past. The talk didn't die down in 9 or even 99 days. The second disappearance of Mr. Bilbo Baggins was discussed in Hobbiton, and indeed all over the Shire, for a year and a day, and was remembered much longer than that. It became a fireside story for young hobbits, and eventually Mad Baggins, who used to vanish with a bang and a flash and reappear with bags of jewels and gold, became a favourite character of legend and lived on long after all the true events were forgotten. But in the meantime, the general opinion in the neighbourhood was that Bilbo, who had always been rather cracked, had at last gone quite mad and had run off into the blue. There he had undoubtedly fallen into a pool or a river and come to a tragic, but hardly an untimely, end. The blame was mostly laid on Gandalf.
"If only that dratted wizard will leave young Frodo alone, perhaps he'll settle down and grow some hobbit sense," they said.
And to all appearance the wizard did leave Frodo alone, and he did settle down, but the growth of hobbit sense was not very noticeable. Indeed, he at once began to carry on Bilbo's reputation for oddity. He refused to go into mourning, and the next year he gave a party in honour of Bilbo's 112th birthday, which he called a hundredweight feast. But that was short of the mark, for 20 guests were invited, and there were several meals at which it snowed food and rained drink, as hobbits say. Some people were rather shocked, but Frodo kept up the custom of giving Bilbo's birthday party year after year until they got used to it. He said that he did not think Bilbo was dead. When they asked, "Where is he then?" he shrugged his shoulders. He lived alone, as Bilbo had done, but he had a good many friends, especially among the younger hobbits, mostly descendants of the old Took, who had as children been fond of Bilbo and often in and out of Bag End. Falco Boffin and Fredegar Bolger were two of these, but his closest friends were Peregrine Took, usually called Pippin, and Merry Brandybuck. His real name was Meriadoc, but that was seldom remembered. Frodo went tramping over the Shire with them, but more often he wandered by himself, and to the amazement of sensible folk he was sometimes seen far from home, walking in the hills and woods under the starlight. Merry and Pippin suspected that he visited the elves at times, as Bilbo had done. As time went on, people began to notice that Frodo also showed signs of good preservation. Outwardly, he retained the appearance of a robust and energetic hobbit just out of his tweens. "Some folk have all the luck," they said. But it was not until Frodo approached the usually more sober age of 50 that they began to think it queer. Frodo himself, after the first shock, found that being his own master and the Mr. Baggins of Bag End was rather pleasant. For some years he was quite happy and did not worry much about the future. But half unknown to himself, the regret that he had not gone with Bilbo was steadily growing. He found himself wondering at times, especially in the autumn, about the wildlands, and strange visions of mountains that he had never seen came into his dreams. He began to say to himself, "Perhaps I shall cross the river myself one day," to which the other half of his mind always replied, "Not yet." So it went on, until his 40s were running out, and his 50th birthday was drawing near. 50 was a number that he felt was somehow significant, or ominous. It was at any rate at that age that adventure had suddenly befallen Bilbo. Frodo began to feel restless, and the old paths seemed too well trodden. He looked at maps, and wondered what lay beyond their edges. Maps made in the Shire showed mostly white spaces beyond its borders. He took to wandering further afield and more often by himself. And Merry and his other friends watched him anxiously. Often he was seen walking and talking with the strange wayfarers that began at this time to appear in the Shah. There were rumors of strange things happening in the world outside, and as Gandalf had not at that time appeared or sent any message for several years, Frodo gathered all the news he could. Elves, who seldom walked in the Shire, could now be seen passing westward through the woods in the evening, passing and not returning. But they were leaving Middle-earth and were no longer concerned with its troubles. There were, however, dwarves on the road, in unusual numbers. The ancient east-west road ran through the Shire to its end at the Grey Havens, and dwarves had always used it on their way to their mines in the Blue Mountains. They were the hobbits' chief source of news from distant parts, if they wanted any. As a rule, dwarves said little and hobbits asked no more. But now Frodo often met strange dwarves of far countries seeking refuge in the west. They were troubled, and some spoke in whispers of the enemy and of the land of Mordor. That name the hobbits only knew in legends of the dark past, like a shadow in the background of their memories, but it was ominous and disquieting. It seemed that the evil power in Mirkwood had been driven out by the White Council, only to reappear in greater strength than the old strongholds of Mordor. The Dark Tower had been rebuilt, it was said. From there the power was spreading far and wide, and away far east and south there were wars and growing fears. Orcs were multiplying again in the mountains. Trolls were abroad, no longer dull-witted, but cunning and armed with dreadful weapons. And there were murmured hints of creatures more terrible than all these, but they had no name. Little of all this, of course, reached the ears of ordinary hobbits, but even the deafest and most stay-at-home began to hear queer tales, and those whose business took them to the borders saw strange things. The conversation in the Green Dragon at Bywater, one evening in the spring of Frodo's 50th year, showed that even in the comfortable heart of the Shire rumours had been heard, though most hobbits still laughed at them. Sam Gamgee was sitting in one corner near the fire, and opposite him was Ted Sandeman, the miller's son, and there were various other rustic hobbits listening to their talk.
"Queer things you do here these days, to be sure," said Sam.
"Ah," said Ted, "you do, if you listen. But I can hear fireside tales and children's stories at home if I want to."
"No doubt you can," retorted Sam, "and I dare say there's more truth in some of them than you reckon. Who invented the stories anyway? Take dragons now."
"No, thank ye," said Ted, "I won't. I heard tell of them when I was a youngster, but there's no call to believe in them now. There's only one dragon in Bywater, and that's green," he said, getting a general laugh.
"All right," said Sam, laughing with the rest. "But what about these tree men, these giants, as you might call them? They do say that one bigger than a tree was seen up away beyond the North Moors not long back.
Who's they?"
"My cousin Hal, for one. He works for Mr. Boffin at Overhill and goes up to the North Farthing for the hunting. He saw one."
"Says he did, perhaps. Your Hal's always saying he's seen things, and maybe he sees things that ain't there."
"But this one was as big as an elm tree, and walking 7 yards to a stride if it was an inch."
"Then I bet it wasn't an inch. What he saw was an elm tree, as like as not."
"But this one was walking, I tell you, and there ain't no elm tree on the North Moors."
"Then Al can't have seen one," said Ted.
There was some laughter and clapping. The audience seemed to think that Ted had scored a point.
"All the same," said Sam, "you can't deny that others besides our Halfast have seen queer folk crossing the Shire. Crossing it, mind you. There are more that are turned back at the borders. The bounders have never been so busy before. And I've heard tell that elves are moving west. They do say they are going to the harbours, out away beyond the White Towers."
Sam waved his arm vaguely. Neither he nor any of them knew how far it was to the sea. past the old towers beyond the western borders of the Shire,